Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast. It's a bunch of baseball nerds talking about the Phillies on radio.com and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Yo! It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. And Jack, here's where I'm at. I started last week's pod basically doing the open and just talking about how excited I was for baseball and how, you know, the whole offseason, the ups and downs. I'm ready. This week, I'm that much more ready for baseball, Jack. I can't wait. I need it more than I need air to breathe. I'm so ready. Carson Wentz, get out of my life. Eagles, I don't need to talk about you. Give me baseball now. That's how I feel. Hey, buddy.
I thought you were going to say give me baseball or give me death.
Oh, that would have been good. I should have said that. That's a disaster that I didn't say that.
Should we restart?
Give me baseball or give me death.
We don't need to restart. Okay.
Did you think you screwed up the audio there? Was that almost a reason? Okay, we're good.
No, it was not. Good? I thought you may want to restart and maybe steal my line.
No, I would never do that to you, Jack. Right. Steal your... No.
No.
Come on.
No. Who would ever
do that to me? It's the other way around, right?
That's true. I walked out of my house. I was on a run this morning along the Schuylkill.
Runner guy, runner Jack.
Listen, you know me. Any chance I can get that out there and get some asphalt underneath my feet? Is it talk about a great day to be me? But so I'm running along the Schuylkill. I turn around, look at the city. I'm just like, it's baseball. It's just, you know, it's 50 degrees today. Punxsutawney Phil is always a fraud. And it's just. Today was such a classic Northeast baseball weather. Like, I was envisioning going out to either Bloom or Ruston and, like, you know, having a practice and how fun it would have been. And, like, I actually missed baseball practice, which is, like, crazy because I didn't like baseball practice. But, every time it's that first warm day after a long winter, it's just baseball.
Baseball. Really, really excited. I'm in a really good mood. I'm digging this team. I'm excited. Let's get into it because I want to get to some of the guys who are already on the team and some specific things in the absurdly low win total that Vegas has put out for the Philadelphia Phillies and all
that's
that.
That's right.
But outrageous. I mean, I actually felt personally affronted when it happened. Never mind the fact that they have not beaten that in the last 3 years. I don't care. It's an outrage, and it's a slap in our faces.
That's
but
right.
First, before we get to that, like, and maybe a good betting opportunity here with what we're about to talk about, Jake Odorizzi. All right, so we did our perfect offseason, what was it, like 3 weeks ago, a month ago now, and maybe the first name I said, but a name very high on my list on my perfect offseason was go sign Jake Odorizzi. Like, it just makes all the sense in the world. Now, rumblings about the Phillies being in on him. So, first of all, we both know we're in on Odorizzi, but the specifics of what Odorizzi could mean for this team, how realistic do you think it is? And more importantly, if they sign Odorizzi, they go over the tax, does that mean, could it be more?
So I don't think they're going to sign him. I know.
I was in a great mood, Jack.
I know. I just,
he's out front.
I don't think they're going to sign him just because of the luxury tax concerns. I don't think they're ready to go over it just yet. But I tweeted this morning, and it had reached Mets Twitter, which is I didn't know was a thing. Well, actually, I guess I knew it was a thing. I was getting a lot of LMAOs, you know, a quote tweet with LMAO. And
sounds like a horrible place, Mets Twitter.
It reached there and then I muted it and I don't know. I haven't looked at it. Actually, yeah, I did look at it and it was like 95 quote tweets. I was like, oh, so this is going well.
See, it's a good thing that it was you, because if it were me, I would have never known it reached Mets Twitter, because I wouldn't have known anyone replied to the tweet, because I wouldn't have seen any of the mentions. So at least it was you.
You're so mentally strong. You know, James.
No, I just don't check my mentions. Like, and even when it has nothing to do with mentally strong. Mentally strong is the rare times that I do check my mentions. I don't care at all what anyone says. So that's the mentally strong part. So you're right. I am incredibly mentally strong. But then not checking the mentions isn't an example of being mentally strong. It's an example of just being smart. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have long doubted if you are a Philly guy, given that you grew up in New York City and whatever.
Yeah.
But given how mentally strong you are, given how mentally strong you are and how you handle adversity, you know, it's great to see. I mean, I no longer have the I no longer have the concern of you not being able to handle this city.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I'm an old man, so I've got lots of years of practice to build up to this.
Yeah, you just figured out Twitter. Yeah.
Second of all, my dad went to high school with Reggie Jackson at Cheltenham High. So
also,
I mean,
also a New York guy. Does it help your case?
No, doesn't get more Philly than that. Cheltenham High, Jack. I mean, come on. And then furthermore, to the age thing, I actually had to like read it multiple times and do the math. But when you tweet it out, or when the High Hopes account,
it could have been our intern.
It could have been anybody. When the High Hopes account tweeted out, James Seltzer will be 53 years old when the Fernando Tatis contract ends. Like, I couldn't believe that that was what I'll be. Yeah. I'll be 50. That's actually the real age.
Yeah.
So for once you were like, this sounds so ridiculous. The reality is enough. Yeah. That it doesn't have to be, he's going to be 75 years old when this ends. So I thought that was something.
Yeah, well, I would just like to say I was in conversations with a station in Indianapolis, and I'm not going to send you there for a first round and a third round pick.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we fired the part-time producer that we brought in to possibly take your gig. We paid him a good salary. We paid him a good amount to get him to come here, but we ultimately decided to go in a different direction. We're fully committed to you, given how mentally tough you are.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
If you had drafted a producer / host behind me, guess what?
Yeah,
I would have been able to handle it.
Look at you.
Unlike other people. All right.
Look at you.
Unlike other people.
Yep.
Well, just saying.
I appreciate it.
Good riddance is what I'm trying to say.
Let's get it back to the Phillies.
Yeah, why are we talking about this? I hate this guy. I don't want to talk about him anymore. Phillies.
I don't know. Where are we going? Where are we going with the Phillies?
I don't know. Where were we? Odorizzi.
Yes.
So you don't,
right.
So you don't actually think there's some smoke, but not real fire.
Yeah, like I think if they got him down to like $6.5 million, I think they would do it. You know, right around $6 million for, you know, if they wanted to give him a couple years, maybe they could do the thing where they give him six this year. And then they give him
12 next year, and even kind of
something like that. Even though I'm pretty sure that still affects luxury tax, I think it comes down to the average AAV.
I think it does too. Actually, like for that reason, that they don't allow teams to have kind of chicanery.
Yeah. So I don't think they're going to sign him. But the more interesting part to me is that they're continuing to look at starters, and to me, this is all about Spencer Howard. I had this overwhelming feeling that they are aiming to use him as a fireman kind of guy. Like, remember when Sir Anthony first came up and it was like, we're not going to make him the closer. He's going to be the guy that gets outs in the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning when teams start making their run. And I kind of think the Phillies are planning to do the same thing with Spencer Howard, just because, you know, they brought in all these names, right? They brought in Matt Moore. They brought in Chase Anderson. Vinny's still here. They're still looking at another starter to add to the mix there. And I could see them waiting it out and signing like an Anibal Sanchez or something. But I just have this feeling that they want to manage Spencer Howard's innings. You know, that shoulder issue is there. And really, it's not the worst thing in the world to say, hey, Spence, like, we're going to manage your innings. Go give us three innings, leave it all out there, and kind of max it out in that standpoint. You know, it lets them control how deep he goes. It lets them, you know, actually maximize his potential for this season. Like, eventually, for Spencer Howard to live up to the prospect status, like, he's going to have to get into that starting rotation. And I fully think he will at one point. But for right now, if you're worried about the shoulder, he's never pitched over 100 innings in any minor league season. He's still a pretty raw pitcher. Like, telling him, like, hey, here, go give us two innings right now and shut this ball game down. You know, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. It doesn't put major mileage on that shoulder. He's not worried about throwing 90 miles an hour in the fifth inning. And it's just two, three innings, go throw as hard as you can and give us the best results you can. So I think this has a lot more to do with Spencer Howard than it does have to do with anything else in the rotation, because they keep looking to add guys.
Yeah, I think it's a really fascinating theory. And I think that it does seem, and look, we've heard a lot of buzz about that, Jim Salisbury talking about it today. Like, we've heard people kind of alluding to the idea that they could use Howard that way. And from a this season competitive sense, it makes a ton of sense. Like, you know, you figure that, and look, that's what we saw a lot with him last year in his starts, was he would have two or three like really good innings, or at least an inning or two that was really good, and then he'd start to falter and start to kind of wear down, and the velocity would dip and all that. So it does make sense from that perspective, from the keeping the shoulder healthy perspective, controlling in perspective. And again, like, to the, what is the best version of Spencer Howard for this team this year? I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, it does, but it does, you know, like you pointed out, ultimately, if we're not just worried about this season, if we're worried about the long-term viability of Spencer Howard, he has to be a starter. I mean, he has to be a starter. That's it. Like, you know, your best case, if you want him to become this guy long-term, is like a Josh Hader type of thing, you know, where you put him in the pen and he's lights out and can give you two, three if you need him, and just striking guys out right and left and just dominant. And then, look, that's a really valuable weapon to have, but, you know, if Spencer Howard doesn't become a starter in the league, I mean, that's a disappointment, a flat out disappointment. And I agree with you that he will be. I'm okay with this, is what I'm trying to say. I worry a little bit about kind of getting him out of his groove, taking him out of that starter role, and not having another year to progress as a starter. Because yes, like, yeah, he's never thrown 100 innings in a season, but he's going to have to at some point if he's going to be a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. So, like, I don't know. Like, I agree with you. I think right now he's a best weapon for this team and most likely to be able to contribute throughout the whole season or a large portion of the season if he's in that role. But it is a little concerning, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little concerning, especially when it seems like they kind of were willing to put Sixto in the JT trade because they believe so much in Spencer Howard. But yeah, it's definitely concerning long-term, just because if they don't think that shoulder's ever going to hold up enough to pitch 100, 150 innings in a season, like, this might be best outcome. And I certainly didn't think that was the case when he was coming up. So I hope it's not, but ultimately, you know, that's something to worry about down in the future. I do think for this team this year, it's probably the best role for him to be in. And
I agree.
And it really gives them a legit weapon. I mean, his stuff is still disgusting. He should be able to throw 97 for those two plus innings, 97, 99, whatever. And then you hope that the slider and curveball all got better. But, you know, I'm not giving up on Spencer Howard, the starter. I think this is just, you know, because you see guys like Sixto come up and it's like, wow, that's like special talent and whatnot. Like, I still believe that Spencer Howard is, like, this is kind of what rookie young pitchers are. I don't know.
Mitch Keller. We used him as an example, but I think it's a good guy. And he was, I mean, he had like an over 8 ERA in his rookie year, or, you know, that first whatever 2 months he was up or whatever. So I think you see that a lot with these high-end guys. Like, the Sixto coming up and just being completely dominant is actually more the exception to the rule than the rule, I would say.
Yes, it just hurts that he was ours at one point.
It's the worst, dude. It's the worst. Because, like, he gives you seven, no problem. Like, it's almost like if he doesn't go seven innings, you're like, what's going on with Sixto today?
I know. But in all seriousness, I do think that if they do sign J.K. Odorizzi, like, it's not,
that's like you're in the playoffs. If you sign, like, it's a that big an upgrade for this team. He's your three starter with Eflin as a four. Eflin's the best four in baseball. Not literally. There are some teams with some really deep rotations, but like, he's right there. Like, that's a superstar four right there.
Yeah, Michael Franco is the best eight-hole hitter in baseball. No, like,
what a throwback! I know. Forgotten about that. That's good stuff, Jack.
Odorizzi, like, he's not unbelievable. You know, I mean, He's just a consistent, solid, like 3.7 to 4 ERA guy that should, you know, when he pitches, he does obviously have injury history. Like for me, the reason why I think it would help the team so much, from like a possible playoff standpoint, and what people, you know, totally missed today on Twitter per usual, but like it just pushes everyone down into a spot that they're probably more comfortable in. Like Jacob Arizzi is not some super difference maker, you know, all of that, but he's a very good number three, number four. Like I believe Eflin's the three. Like
I think Eflin has a much higher ceiling than Odorizzi. I just think you can count on Odorizzi a little bit more.
Yeah, I just believe in Eflin.
I agree. I think Eflin's ceiling is definitely higher than what Jake Odorizzi would give you. I'm in on Eflin. Like I was gonna get to it, but like I'm fully in. I feel like last year I was fighting people on Zach Eflin. Like I just think Zach Eflin's good. I think he's a really good pitcher with a high ceiling in the sense that, you know, we've seen him go on these runs where, you know, for, you know, a start or in some cases multiple starts in a row, he doesn't just look like a good start. He looks elite at times. And I don't think he's ultimately elite, but I think Zach Eflin's really good. And I think that people who are not sold on him are wrong,
right,
to be honest.
Right. Two things real quick. And then it allows Chase Anderson and Matt Moore, Vinny to be the five rather than the 4-5, which is just massive. And then
you can rotate those guys in and out. You can give them rest when they need it. Yeah. It just gives you so much more flexibility.
It would be great. But on Eflin, like I couldn't agree with you more. And for me, the reason why I'm more in on him this year than in years past is what he did last year strikeout wise. I mean, for the years before, it was kind of like, yeah, he's a sinker baller, a lot of hard contact, not a lot of hard contact, but a lot of contact, a lot of balls in play, all that good stuff. But last year, I mean, he was legitimately missing bats, like at a good rate.
Like swing and miss stuff, like nasty stuff.
Yeah,
you're watching.
Which he had never flashed before.
Ever.
And, you know, you see the other day, he's talking about how he views himself as a one. I think that's a good kind of mentality to have, obviously. Working on the change up a little bit. Like, I've always really enjoyed watching locked in Eflin. I mean, I think when we first, or maybe a little bit into this podcast, I think I called him the tunneling god. Just because, I mean, he has a really good sense of pitching. But like last year, he was up to 95 miles an hour. Like, Eflin was legitimately throwing hard and striking a ton of guys out. I thought his curveball last year was a good addition, a good little, mix up pitch. So, I think people are a little too down on Eflin given what he's done the last couple of years and how up and down he was, or up and down he's been in his career. But I think this is the year it all comes together for him. And I don't know if he's never going to be a one, never going to be maybe a low end two, but like he's going to be a very consistent performer this year that will mix in those random complete games. But I don't think he's going to have the just completely falling apart like two or three week stretch that he's had in years past.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you.
Now he does have to beat the Braves. Like I'm sick and tired of the Eflin just stinking against the Braves, but that's really every starter on this team.
That's the Phillies. All right, so quickly, let's live in a, again, because I do agree with you. Ultimately, if I had to bet on will they sign Odorizzi or not, I would bet that they don't. But let's live in a world where they do and they decide, look, cause I do think that for the first time in a long time, I, you know, you've been preaching it for a while, but I do believe with what Dombrowski has been able to get Middleton to do with Harper's comments about Dombrowski, we'll get to that, all that stuff. But I do think that Dombrowski has Middleton's trust. And I think that if they're, my philosophy going into the season is if they're a good team, like a real true competitive team, that Middleton will allow Dombrowski to make trades to go over the cap if they need to at the deadline to bulk up the team. I think that'll happen. Like, I believe they're willing to go over the deadline. I think in a perfect world, they don't want to go over the deadline this year. I think they're kind of looking more towards next year. But if they're in a scenario here where Odorizzi is just cheaper than he should be and it's a value signing, do you see a world where, because once you go over, what is it, like $30 million before you hit that next phase of the cap? So, like, once you're over, it's like, why not go a little more over, theoretically? Like, is there a world where they say, you know, screw it, we're going to sign Odorizzi and we're going to go JBJ to play center field and let's, like, take a shot?
Huh. No.
No, you don't think so? No.
No, I'm sorry,
come on,
buddy.
John, let's
I know. You're getting a little fired up over there. I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
But like, I agree, and I don't think that'll happen. But like, you can understand like a logical world where that makes a lot of sense.
Well, especially we talked about this a lot last year about why we wanted to go over is because the Arrieta contract comes off the books and all that stuff. But you could make the case like, hey, we got money coming off next year as well. Like, go over this year. You could probably reset it if you need to. You know, until he goes over the tax, like, I'm not going to buy
it. Exactly.
Same. But I do think that if they are, I think if they're in it at the deadline, I do think he's going to go over it. And I think he trusts Dombrowski with his money. And I don't think he would feel like he's throwing money away at a bad roster. Because ultimately, like, they all have to understand that they have 3 years. I mean, if we're being serious, like 3 years with this core, obviously they can rebuild towards the end of Bryce's contract, all that stuff. But like for this core, it's 3 years. You have 3 years to really do it. So like, why not, I guess. But honestly, like, I'm just happy that they've spent to this point. And I know that's, you know, kind of a cop out, but like, I'm happy they spent to this point. I'm just satisfied heading into the season. I mean, they still have the fourth highest payroll in baseball. That's crazy. So
no, I'm with you on that, but like, I agree. Look, you can't knock them for not spending, but at the same time, like why half-ass it at this point, right? Like, when you look at the situation, especially in an offseason where, like, look, whatever Jake Odorizzi signs for at this point, he's going to be a value. Whatever JBJ signs for, which will probably be a one-year deal at this point, he's going to be a value compared to what he should get in a normal offseason, a normal market. So I agree with you, and I agree with what I think they'll do and all that, but, like, there is a real argument to be made to take advantage of this situation, to take advantage of these lower prices, and to say, look, if we're willing to go over at the trade deadline, if we have a good team, because I do believe that. I do believe that if they're sitting there in first place at the deadline and they got a squad and they're winning games, like, they'll go over because they're going to add to that team. Like, I do believe that when, I don't know, again, I'm the one who's always said he has to go over for me to believe he'll go over. But like, I believe that the way this is trending is that if they're legit, he'll go over. Like, why not go over? Like, why not do it now and have JBJ for a full season, have Odorizzi for a full season, and then all of a sudden you're like a team, you're a playoff team.
It's like the old Hall of Fame argument. Like, you know, he's a Hall of Famer when you see a Hall of Famer. Like, what is 1 year going to do?
Yeah, absolutely it is.
Listen, I agree with you. I agree with you. The Odorizzi thing is going to be really interesting because I think they're, what are they, about 8 under right now? Or are they 12?
I didn't even think it was that much, but it's somewhere in that range, yeah.
I actually think they might be 12 under. They might be 12 under with the, because I think it's $198 million, whatever, and it's 210s attack. So the Odorizzi thing is going to be interesting because I think if they look at this team, they have to see what we see about the 4-5, you know? So it's going to be interesting what they do there. I think he's going to go over at the deadline. I would be shocked if he goes over now. I would like to be surprised, but it sure is a nice thought to think.
It is, isn't it? Like, what a fun way to think.
Welcome back.
It's fun. Look, and to your, yeah, exactly. At least to your point, even if they don't. And what, like, again, my point kind of goes contrary to the, hey, at least they've spun as much as they have. But my point doesn't happen without them spending as much as they have. So I do agree with you on a basic level. All right. I want to get into a few other things. Quickly, I mentioned it before, but we both agree that the over-under of 81.5 is
ludicrous.
And I'm with you. I agree. I think it's ludicrous. I really believe they will win more than 81.5 games. And yet, I have to check myself. Because we've done this exact same time of year podcast 3 years in a row now or whatever. And we have said, oh, they'll win more than 81 games. Like, they're not going to be a 500 baseball team. And scene. So, like, I'm with you. I saw this and my gut was like, I've generally been around 84, 85 with upside is kind of where I see them. But, and that's why I do feel like this is low. Like, they're in 83. If I thought it'd be 83, 82.5, 83, whatever, like 81.5 definitely feels low. But, like, tell me why when they have not won more than 81 games, or like in a shortened season, more than 500. Like, tell me why this is finally a time with, in fairness, while they've made good, they've had a good offseason, like, for the most part, let's be real, it's the same freaking team. You know, the bullpen we hope is better, and their RG Bradley alone is better, but like, the moves were run it back type moves.
Oh, wah. Listen, honestly, this is the High Host Podcast. this is the High Host Podcast.
I'm presenting the other side.
I know,
here,
but
Zach.
It's like there's no other side here. I will quit this podcast if they don't win more than 81 games this year. That is a freaking joke. Would you stop?
You sure? Should I edit that out just in case? No one listens
to what we say anyway. Okay. No one's gonna remember this. No one brought up my Kingery thing until you brought it up. So like, whatever. Like, honestly, you know, they ran it back, same team, blah, 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 blah. The bullpen is much better than it was last year. Just top to bottom. I mean, you said they added legitimate guys back there. What are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? It's not the same bullpen. It's not freaking Deulis Guerra being our setup guy. Like, now instead of Hector Neris being the closer, it's Hector Neris in the eighth. Then you have Spencer Howard to get a factor in the 7-8-9. And then you have to add in the Kinslers and all these guys to go along with Archie Bradley, Jose Alvarado, Tony Watson. Like, would you stop? Would you stop with the same team as last year? The top six offense in the league last year. And they're adding a whole 162 of Alec Bohm, which is like, I mean, that's a reason enough to look up or wake up in the morning and just be excited. Like, enough with your wambulance, okay? Break out the wambulance. You're around Zoe for too long today. I mean, seriously, they're going over 81.5 wins. And listen, I'll say it again. I'll quit this podcast if they don't go over 81.5 wins.
Okay. I appreciate that.
No, but again,
I'm just presenting the other side, Jack. We've done this. I have to talk to the listeners who are sitting there saying, like, look, I'm optimistic. I'm excited too. But didn't you guys do this?
No.
Didn't you say, like, 86 wins last year? Didn't you say 90 the year before? Yeah, we did.
I never said 90. I never said that. This is the best. This is the best I've felt about this team in the last 3 years. Even the Harper year. But I would just like to say this, James, and I would like to say this to you, is because you've said this at least 4 times on this podcast over the last few weeks. They did not run it back with the same team. It is not the same team. You look at that bullpen and tell me it's the same bullpen as last year. They have one hole on offense, and it's center field, and when McCutchen can't play. Okay. They fix backup catcher, get Jeff Mathis in there. Real Muto's going to be fine. There's going to be no lingering effects from the thumb. And Jake Arrieta's gone, okay? Jake Arrieta is gone. And what you have not factored in when you're talking about, oh, it's the same team, is Dave Dombrowski is here. And if there's... And if there's one thing that if there's one thing that I know about my guy Dave Dombrowski is the guy knows how to put together a ball club. There's not going to be holes. There's not going to be like roster things that make no sense. You know, you're not going to like just enough. Okay, with the negativity, the people don't want to hear it. If they go under 81.5 this year, I will quit this podcast.
Okay.
I'm sorry that I felt like I was talking to you, but I feel like I had to talk.
You had to have a talk with me because I presented the other side of a discussion.
You're in timeout.
I said I think they're way over 81.5.
No, you're in timeout. You're in podcast timeout.
They did everything to build the bullpen. It's the best bullpen in the history of baseball.
Thank you.
You are the easiest sell. Like there, you know that like the cliche, and there are many versions of it. But I could sell ice to an Eskimo. You are an Eskimo who would buy ice. That's you.
That's fine. Well, only on the Phillies. But is that like one of those?
You'd buy Phillies ice.
Is that one of those dumb like sayings that you guys were talking about yesterday?
You know that saying? Come on, you've never heard that saying?
I thought it was sell a timeshare in Florida or something.
That's why I said there are multiple versions of this saying. I think ice to an Eskimo was like the most common one I've heard.
Yeah,
but yes, it is one of those
one.
Sayings, Jack.
Okay.
Don't rip them; they're awesome. Like when pigs fly. What a saying!
It doesn't
what
make
a
any
saying.
Sense.
When hell freezes over. What a saying! I mean, come on, 6-1, half dozen in the other. It's a saying.
That's a lot, honestly. I think I had like a couple.
That's all you got? Oh, I could probably go all day. I don't want to though.
Well, I don't want to subject our listeners to that. So
nor do I, Jack. I'll just say what comes around goes around.
That's right. So, it's one of my faves.
All right, Dubrowski, quickly.
Yes. My guy.
Bryce Harper's guy. Bryce coming out and really kind of being very frank and commenting about how, you know, Dave Dombrowski being here and getting here was kind of what made him feel good about the Phillies. What do you think about what Bryce had to say about Dombrowski and how it kind of, look, it jives with, again, we are reformed Dave Dombrowskiites, all in on Dave, but we didn't always think that way. What do you think about what Harper had to say?
It was fascinating. And honestly, I appreciated it from the standpoint of, I think Bryce felt the way that all of us felt. It was like, where's the direction of the team going? What are we doing here? Are we going to spend any money? Are we going to cut payroll? Am I going to be sitting here next year on a 75 win ball club? I mean, is JT coming back? All this stuff. So I just appreciated that Bryce was looking at it from our point of view, but it is nice to have the star player like be all in on the organization. I know Bryce has been all in with the signed JT stuff, but it's nice that he is not kind of looking over his shoulder like, you know, I'm going to go out here and bust my ass like I do for every game, and the organization's not going to back me up. And also, I think the most important thing from the Bryce Dombrowski thing was that it made him not lose faith in John Middleton. Because I think Bryce was like, this guy came out to Las Vegas, you know, wine and dine me, sold me on the Phillies, all this stuff. I get here, and 2 years later, we're cutting payroll, and we're talking about, you know, shedding all this salary. And sure, that might have been Middleton's original goal. I'm not sure that it was, but bringing in a guy like Dombrowski and letting him and trusting him with the money, and bringing back JT and bringing back Didi and making the upgrades that they did, like, it just gives John Middleton, it doesn't lose a big fan of his in Bryce Harper, because I think Bryce was teetering on the what are we doing here club, and I think he might have lost his superstar, and that's not a great thing to have 2 years into a 13-year contract.
Yeah, look, we talked about it. We said one of the things, if they don't sign JT, it's almost like how long till Bryce asks for a trade. I'm with you. And again, I think that's the thing that you and I underrated with our initial reactions to Dombrowski. We were strictly looking at situations and the right person for that situation. It didn't feel like Dave Dombrowski's history and how he went about, you know, building teams essentially was the right type of guy for this situation. And I think we misjudged that, particularly from a credibility standpoint. Like, and I think you're seeing it with what Bryce said, and I think you're really seeing it around baseball. Like, baseball respects Dave Dombrowski. Like, baseball people think Dave Dombrowski is legit. And I do think there is something that comes with that. Like, you know, you and I are both Sam Hinkie guys. We were all in on the process. We believed in that guy. What happened, it was a travesty and all that. But I do think when you talk about Sam Hinkie, I think the one issue Sam Hinkie had was the way the rest of the league looked at him and the way the rest of the league respected him in terms of making deals and all this type of stuff, where they, you know, I think that hindered him at least a little bit, a certain amount or whatever. And I do think that Dave Dombrowski being the, having the reputation he has, having the pedigree he has for an organization that felt rudderless, particularly with Andy McPhail in charge. I do think we underrated the just flat out respectability and you know, that kind of he brings to a franchise and what it means for the players on that franchise and for the what the organization is viewed like throughout baseball and by other players and other front offices and all that. I think we underrated Dave Dombrowski. At least I think I did.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It gives them a level of credibility, but I don't want to go too far in that direction just because I felt the same way about Girardi, and it didn't really manifest itself in year one.
You know, but it's a much, much, much more important role that Dave Dombrowski has than Joe Girardi.
It is. And I think it does add a level of credibility. And ultimately, I do think it gave that the guys in the team an extra, you know, pep in their step. You know, it got them, it was like, all right, we're gonna be good.
Make
here.
Them believe. Yeah. It's like, all right, they care. Drew Middleton cares. Like, yeah. He doesn't. You know, so I'm with you.
I really do wonder where they go, where they would have gone had Dombrowski not picked up for the third time.
I don't want to think about it. I worry.
Remember, like the who's that awful the guy from the Yankees?
Jim Hendry.
Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, buddy.
Man, thank God.
Ned Coletti. Coletti. Like. Ugh. Yeah, it worked out.
Thank God that Dave Dombrowski picked up.
All right, quickly, before we move on from Bryce Harper, a public service announcement. And it's a shame because it's not the High Hopes listeners who are, like, everyone who's listening is going to be like, yeah, duh. Like, I know. Like, you're not telling me anything you know. But this is more a public service announcement to make sure that you don't let people get away with this, whether it's Joe DiCamera or any of these other people or whatever. But like all the people who are like giving Bryce crap for being like, oh, he's like pandering and oh, the stupid fanatic cleats. Oh, like he's trying too hard. Screw you. Like, screw you. All we ever wanted in this town is an athlete who gives a bleep about us. Like, that's it. Who, like, actually cares about the way he presents himself in thinking, will my fan base like this? Will they appreciate this? It infuriates me. It drives me up a wall when people are going at Bryce, over the Philly guy, like, BS on it. Like, no. Like, this guy gives a crap. Like, at least he cares what we think. At least he gives a crap about finding ways to relate to us, to get us to associate with him, to look at him as someone we would want to root for. And for that, whether it's real, whether it's fake, whether it's pandering, whatever, bravo, Bryce Harper. You deserve every ounce of credit in the world for actually giving a crap about your fan base and what your fan base would like and want out of a star player. So to every one of those haters out there, go away. Don't root for Bryce Harper. We don't want you on the Bryce Harper bandwagon. Go root for someone else, because stop ripping my dude for caring about his fan base and trying to make his fan base happy. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a little much, but I got you.
No, stop. No, it's perfect. Bring it, Bryce.
Well, I don't feel like...
Clearwater, bring it.
I actually like the Clearwater shirt. Because
it's great. It's awesome. Here,
Do you think Bryce has a hoagie mouth? Do you think he's working on it?
Yeah, I think he's working on it.
I would love for him to do one post-game interview like, yeah, it's happening, fouls. Yeah, damn Clearwater.
I do have one caveat to that.
Okay.
One tiny, minuscule little caveat.
Okay.
He should come on the I Hope Spot if he really wants to, you know, really relate to the fans.
I mean,
and care about the fans who really, truly care about him. He should be on the I Hope Spot. But other than that, you're perfect.
We are easily pandered to.
Oh my god. Again, I just said give me more pandering. I know.
I have long been anti-pandering, but I gotta be honest, I love when Bryce does it.
Thank you. See, that's my point. It's awesome. Keep doing it. All right, couple other things. Quickly, we mentioned it just in passing earlier, but are you at all concerned about the Romito broken hand injury? Like, I couldn't tell if you were serious or not. You're like, oh, it's all fine, no worries. But does it worry you at all?
So do you want to know,
let us inside the diseased mind of Jack Fritz, yes.
Do you honestly want to know what my first thought was?
Yes.
Was like,
literally.
Was like, wow, Jose Alvarado must be nasty.
Well, I can actually confirm that, because I will tell people that when Jack texted me about it, the first thing he said was something. I don't remember. So it was something like, I think what it was I texted him like real muto, like bleep, whatever. And he goes, yeah, but do you know who threw the pitch? Like, it was like, that was your first thought.
Yeah, I know. Now what pokes holes in that theory or whatever is, I think it was like a curveball in the dirt. Like, I thought, honestly, my first thought was like, oh, it was a 98 turbo sinker that he caught on the thumb. So it being just a curveball in the dirt, doesn't get me as excited, but, no, I am not worried about JT. He's still catching, bullpens, which is good to see. He's obviously not hitting or anything yet. And I don't think it's going to be like, I mean, it's a, ultimately, like, it's his top hand on when he's batting. So, like, it wasn't the bottom hand, which is big. Obviously, the throwing hand is an issue, but I'm not too worried about him throwing. Like, that's, like, the least part of it. I mean, I think he's going to be fine back there. So, I am not worried about JT. He will be, but, like, and here's my thing. Here's my thing with him and Reese is, like, I know everyone wants to be there for opening day special and all that stuff. But, like, don't rush it back. Like, it's 162. You got to think about 162 over opening weekend and all that stuff. So I hope that they play it smart and just kind of, you know, go from that standpoint.
100% agree. And I'm not super concerned, but I agree. Play it smart. Speaking of Reese, though, I do think, if I'm not mistaken, I saw a tweet from you. You think people are underrating Reese a little bit.
I swear, people just, like, make up narratives about Reese, and I hate the word narrative, but whatever. Like, I swear, like,
love the word narrative. It's such a good word.
Like,
I know it's been overused, but it's just a good word.
I know, but, like, people just, like, make up this, like, he was bad last year thing and all that. Like, yeah, I understand that he got off to a slow start. I totally get it, but I mean, the guy was a legitimately good player before he got hurt. I mean, I put it out there, but he was batting last 20 games or whatever, 275, 348 OBP, you know, over 1,000 OPS, all that stuff. And I know it's on a whole season and all that, but, like, he was starting.
It felt like he figured it out. It felt like he got past the horror show of the end of 2019 and the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, and ultimately, like, he was getting Maylied. You know, John Maylie was ruining him. So, like, he was overcoming that. He came into spring training last year with a whole new, like, swing or whatever, and just, it clearly didn't work. Like, he went back to his old ways, and that was a good thing. Like, the guy's hit that way for his whole life. Why would you change it in one offseason? And I think working with Joe Dillon and all that stuff, you know, getting a full year with Joe Dillon, and, you know, we're starting to see the real Reese Hoskins, and it's unfortunate that he got hurt, but, like, you know, people are like, oh, you know, trade him and all this stuff, and he's not going to be here anyway. Like, I don't think that's fair to Reese, and I think he's a much better player than sometimes he's given credit for around here.
I agree. I'm with you. I really liked what I saw from him the second half of last season. And look, I do think there is something to be said, and Joe Girardi's talked about it when he was on with Angel the other day. Like, I think he's talked about how weird it was for the coaches last year and how it was tougher for them to really work with guys in a detailed way and put their hands on guys and all that type of stuff. So you hope that with a full 162, a normal season, the normal ups and downs and home games and all this type of stuff, that you feel like, hopefully that coaching staff, especially with obviously Girardi and Dillon, but, you know, with Cotham coming in particularly, can have a bigger effect on the players and all that. I don't give a full pass, but I do give the coaching staff a bit of a pass for last season with the weirdness and all of it. Quickly, how good is Alec Bohm going to be this year? I think we're starting to see a little excitement, you know, the little bit of adjustments he's made, all that kind of stuff. Am I, like, crazy to think that he's just going to be a stud from the jump and there aren't going to be downturns and this guy's just going to be a 300 hitter?
Yeah, like, I know.
Is that going to happen?
I know. I've fought the same thing because I just don't want to ever think about it. But, yeah, it's tough because, you know, sophomore slumps are real.
Yeah, it happens over and over and over again.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. Like, I just think he's such a talented hitter, and he's such, like, a, like, it's not like he's a big strikeout guy. You know, you could definitely see that coming with the strikeouts. You could usually predict a bit of a sophomore slump, but the guys elite at putting the bats at the ball. And I actually, like, I love the swing changes he's slowly started to make. You know, people were freaking out, like, oh, you know, why would you mess up a good thing? Well, because he doesn't want to hit ground balls all the time. You know, for as much as I love Bohm, it was a lot of ground balls. A high BABIP, as we like to say in the biz. But,
got lucky.
Yeah. But I actually really, really liked the swing changes he was making. He's starting to pull the ball. Because ultimately, that's the next thing that he's going to have to do is pull the ball with power. He only did it a couple, like, I think he had, what, one home run last year to left field. The other two were to right center and center field. So, that's the next kind of step of his game, really, is the pull power. I don't want him to turn into a dead pull hitter, and I don't think he will, but, that's kind of the next evolution. That's how you go from a 20 home run guy to a 35 home run guy. So, I really like the swing adjustments that we saw the other day in that quick, Phillies highlight thing. But yeah, it's like, cause I'm with you too. Like, I know this is what we do around this time is, like, we talk ourselves into, like, every player on the roster, But
best
there's
season, best shape of his life, Jack.
Oh, and there's a new one out there right now that is making me even more excited than he has a new pitch. But with Boehm, it's like I just think that guy's gonna bet 300 and hit 25 to 30 homers and, you know, get all the big hits that they need. And I genuinely cannot wait for 162 of Alec Boehm. I know it's not going to be 162, but you get the point.
I know you tweeted it.
I'm just
sitting here thinking about it.
I was just sitting there thinking about it last night. Like, dude makes hard contact, and then it's 50 degrees today walking around. You know, it also feels like Alec Boehm weather. So, yeah, I'm just so fired up. And I was going to say this for the take bag, but I might as well do it now. Like, they asked him about like his defense in the Zoom call yesterday. And like the intensity in his eyes of like of like, I'm gonna figure it out is oh. I was just like, oh,
you believe you're in?
Oh, I'm just giddy. He was like, yeah, the haters have motivated me, and like just was
wow.
was just like deadpanned about it. And I was like, oh my god. Well, because I mean,
he's got a lot of work to do.
But I will say this. I didn't notice it as much late in the year. Like when he first got up, it was a disaster.
I agree. It did seem like he settled in a bit.
Yeah, and the game's gonna slow down for him and all that good stuff.
Well, all right. So this is actually a perfect segue, and I only have two more things I want to get to, and then we get to the take bag. Somehow we always go so much longer than I ever. I thought this would be like a 30-minute podcast, but yes. Hence. That's why we do what we do. Perfect segue, because my brother has been really on me to read an article that he sent to me. Joe Sheehan, I don't know if I'm sure there are enough disease baseball fans on here that some people know who Joe Sheehan is, but he does a newsletter, and it's a really, really, really great buy. Like, it's like, it's not expensive for the year, and you get it every day, and it's just like you have to really love the rest of the league, because it's obviously not often about the Phillies. It's about baseball and about other teams and all that, but you know, every once in a while I'll be on the Phillies. But regardless, it's a really good read, and it comes to your email. It's nice. But he did one on the Phillies a couple weeks ago that my brother sent to me that it took me a while to get to, but I think that sometimes with analytics and people who cover the league nationally and watch teams – you know, watch a lot of baseball, but don't watch a team every night like we do. Sometimes you can miss things. I do think that watching 160, 162, whatever, of the Phillies, you get a better feel for that team than anyone possibly could by just looking at numbers.
And especially when you listen to the High Hills podcast in addition.
Obviously. Right. I mean, come on. That goes without saying. But he had a really interesting piece about how historically bad the Phillies have been defensively the last three seasons, and how it has not just been a one-year thing, how it has been a consistent thing. And I do think that a lot of it, particularly with the numbers with balls put in play that were turned into hits, like historically bad type stuff, I do think a lot of it was truly bad pitching, like a bad bullpen that just got hit really hard. But do you at all worry? I mean, he made a very compelling case. And again, I do think part of it is not watching the team every night, and there were holes in the argument. But on a macro sense, he did make a very compelling case that the Phillies defensively are a truly deficient team, and that they're just not quite good enough in the other areas to make up for how bad they are defensively. Where do you come down on that? Because we don't talk a ton about defense. You know, we talk enough, but numbers wise, they've been a horrendous defensive team the last few seasons.
Well, I wonder, it's tough for me to gauge before last year. You know, like I didn't watch last year's team and come away thinking, wow, they're a bad defensive team. Like, there were some things like the Didi ball in Buffalo, and Boehm, some miscues he made, and McCutcheon not having the same range he used to have, and center field in general has just not been great. But
Reese,
like,
is a bad first baseman. Like,
well,
he is,
but last year I didn't think he was a sieve over there. Like, I thought
he improved, but he's still bad. Like, he's still bad.
I don't think he's great. I don't think he's great. But I also think that, like, remember? I mean, before there was the Phillies bullpen, there was the Phillies defense of 2018, which was
Reese in left field is the worst thing I've ever seen defensively on a night to night basis.
Yeah, I mean, you had Reese in left, you had Kingery at, you know, shortstop or second or third or whatever. You know, like you had some, like, that 2018 team, and the plus, like, do you remember the story about they were just shifting wrong the whole time, like the first half?
Well, that was unreal.
Yeah, it was unreal. It was a disaster. So yeah, the 2018 team was legitimately the worst defensive team I've ever seen in my life. Like, not even
literally,
like,
literally, yeah.
bar none. Like the worst I've ever seen in my life. 2019 slowly getting a little bit better, but you know.
So that's the question though. Is it possible that like, yeah, they're better now than they were in 2018 by a lot, but that they're still like really bad. You know?
Yeah, well, I definitely don't think they're great defensively. I mean, but I do also think that McCutcheon is going to be healthier this year. That should help give him some range. I think Bones will be better defensively, just through all the work that he's been putting in. I think Segura is a better second baseman than we give him credit for. I actually thought he was really impressive last year when he played there. And then with center field, I'm anticipating Kingery taking that job and running with it. And I do think that if Kingery played out there every day, I do think he would be an adequate center fielder with ability to get the balls. Like I think Roman Quinn was terrible out there and Hazley just didn't have the kind of range that you need in center field. So I don't buy they're a bad defensive team. I think they're an average defensive team.
Okay. Yeah. I think they're below average, but I agree. Look, when I thought it was worth bringing up because metrics wise, they really are, but I thought it was something where I think when you watch them every night, they're not quite as bad as the metrics say. I think it was a lot more pitching being just truly all time horrendously awful, but I thought it was interesting to bring up. All right, last thing, and I will let you, I'm not going to bring up the guy because I know you're going to talk about him in your take bag. So I'm going to leave that for you. Last thing I have is, we actually know, Jack, when we can turn on our televisions and watch the Philadelphia Phillies, the spring training schedule is out, buddy. Pretty awesome. I don't know about you, but March 1st can't get here soon enough. It seems like you watch a lot of these games on MLB TV. If you have that, which is really cool for me and you who have that. And a fair amount on looks like actually a real fair amount on NBC like Sports as
that
well.
That looks more
like
than looks in like years past.
The
right?
First 10 or so, or first 8 or so, are all on NBC Sports Network. So really, like, we're gonna get to watch the Phillies play a little baseball soon. Spring training baseball, but still baseball, Jack.
Well, yeah, and I kind of thought that there was more than usual, and it looks like there is. I'm not gonna break down old spring training TV schedules, but I wonder if that's because I don't think T-Mac and the guys are down there. I think they're here. And I think that all they're going to do is just take the opposing team's feed and make it their own, like even on road games, you know? So I wonder if that's why we're getting more spring training games this year. So I don't know, man. I'm just so giddy. I mean, I'm furious.
So giddy.
I'm just furious that Sunday is not going to be on TV anywhere. You know, that genuinely makes me upset. I would love to break down two innings of Ivan Nova as much as the next guy.
Oh, I know you would. I know you would.
As much, yeah.
I know you would.
But you know, whatever. We'll make it work. We'll make it work. It'll be okay. Yeah, it just seemed like there was a good amount. And honestly, like, I just can't wait to, because I'm not gonna be able to watch them at work, which is gonna be like, it's gonna drive me freaking nuts. I mean,
I love that about you. Like, I can't have the TV on when I'm producing. I turn it off. I'm sure you know, because you have to turn it on when you go in if you want to watch anything. I can't. It distracts me too much if I'm producing my show.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm too invested in the show to, like.
Oh, I got you. Okay, so not that you can't watch because it won't be on. You can't watch because you can't do the show and watch. Got you. That makes sense.
Yeah. Like, I won't.
Co-sign.
I won't watch till I get home. So, yes.
Co-sign.
But I can't wait to get home and sit down and do it like an invested deep dive, like an invested deep dive back into the Bulls.
Let's go. I need it. I know. Need it so bad. Like, I'm so, I felt like last season was such a sham and also such a disappointing season for Phillies fans and also just such a not fun watch to have to, as we talked about a million times with the bullpen, how it just made it not fun to watch, knowing that no game was safe or no game you felt comfortable or whatever. Like, it just sucked. Last year sucked. I'm not breaking news here. 2020 sucked for everybody across the board. But specifically, the Phillies season and baseball as a whole sucked ass last year. So it really feels like we've been waiting 2 years for this. That's kind of where I'm at and why my excitement level is extraordinarily high for this season.
Even though you said they were locked to not win 81 games.
Not say that. Go back and check the tape, Jack. All right, take bag time. I'm out. We're done. I gotta put my daughter. We're like 30 minutes past my daughter's bedtime. My wife's texting me like, "How's it going?" I'm like, "It's going. It's going as fast as I can here."
Yeah. All right. Well, then I'll get you out of here on this.
It's all right. Anything for high hopes.
I actually don't.
She knows that. It is what it is.
I actually don't really have much besides the fact that
I feel like I hit a lot. I felt like I did a really good job. For those who don't know, by the way, I texted Jack before my notes app with like all my notes that I like put together. I'm like, hey, am I missing anything? You know, is there anything I need outside of the take bag? And Jack sends me back, LOL. Like, what? It's funny that I tried to prep for this podcast. Awesome.
In my defense, I respond back, LOL, just for like no reason.
I wrote LOL with a question mark, and Jack goes, I'm sorry, I don't know why I wrote that.
Yeah, I don't know why I said LOL. Like, it wasn't really a laughing.
Such a weird response. I was like, I'm just trying to prep for our podcast.
I was just trying to say, like, I see it, I guess. I don't know. I'm a quick LOL guy. Actually, I only really have two things, but one is that Scott Kingery's wearing contacts now, and if you thought that I was in on the training camp storyline of he's learned a new pitch, I mean, I'm on a whole new level with contacts. A guy wearing contacts finally being able to see for the first time.
I'm with you on that. I think that matters. Like, eyesight is so important as a hitter. So like, I don't know if it will make a difference, but I do. That is the kind of stuff that, like, I'm with you. Like, that sways me. I hear that, I'm like, he can see. He can finally see.
Now, my other follow-up to that would be, why did it take so long? But we're here, we're finally here. And there seems to be a good vibe around Kingery. You know, he's lost 10 to 15 pounds. He's wearing contacts now. He's more athletic, he says, and feels like he's flying around. And last year, I do think, was humbling for him. And now he's a full, 3 years removed from his first year, where it was just like, he felt like he was drowning, and you know, just like, it was a lot of pressure given the contract, and now the pressure's pretty much off Kingery. Like, it's really only upside from this point on, and I do think that I think he's going to take center field, and I think he's going to run with it, and I think we're going to finally see the first real version of Scott Kingery that we thought we were seeing in the minor leagues and coming up through all of that and all that good stuff. And I would just like to say, the official hashtag of Scott Kingery this year as a full High Hopes community and nation is hashtag Jetpacks Back. I mean, I can't wait, dude. I can't wait for Scotty to start going off a little bit. And I need the hashtag of Jetpacks Back to get trending. So it's my main goal. If Scott could hold up his end of the bargain, that would be great. But Jetpacks Back is a strong hashtag.
Well, you know that High Hopes will hold up. The High Hopes community listeners will hold up their end of the bargain. It's really on Scott, because Jetpacks Back is a perfect hashtag if, right? It's like a perfect hashtag if.
Yes.
So do it, Scott. I'm very with you. And look, just on a basic level, like, it's very easy to explain, and he might not be good, it might never work out, whatever, but you can very easily make a very strong argument for why you think Scott Kingery will be a lot better this year. I mean, he absolutely showed flashes 2 years ago. He looked at, and you know, injuries were really the only thing that kind of slowed it down at times. He looked like the guy we thought he could be, or flashes of it. And then he had COVID right before the season and was just never the same. Like, so like, it's very easy to understand why last year was a wash for him. He just needs to be back. Like, he has to bring it this year. This is it. This is a make or break year for Scott Kingery.
Yeah, this is the last year you can say, like, oh, he's got potential and all that stuff. Like, it's over. If he doesn't produce this year, it's over. I would like to name Archie Bradley the closer, but I'm not fully there yet.
Yeah, we can't do that yet.
No.
We need to rein it in. It's been long enough here where, like, we kind of got to pull back on the Archie Bradley love as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no.
I mean, thank you. Let me just say thank you, because High Hopes listeners are just so far and away the best podcast listeners of any podcast on the planet. Like, you have very strongly let Archie Bradley know what he should do.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's there. We just gotta, like, let it happen. That's, you know, and I can't put my whole self into him yet. I'm holding back.
Yeah. No, listen, I'm with you. I'd love to be all in, like, the walking into the stadium, you know, the Grateful Dead stuff, and you know, he seems really fired up to be there and all that stuff. And Archie, I know you listen to the podcast, so I'm sure you're aware that, like, I saw that you're going to be on Chris Rose's new show. That's a podcast. I mean, that's a podcast that's not High Hopes. So I would just like for that to change. And listen, if you, I mean, High Hopes, we will be fully behind you if you come on the podcast. So, Archie, it's time.
It's time. All right. Final thoughts, because Emily just texted me and I got to go. So final thoughts, Jackie.
There's High Hops is back at Four Fingers. If you want to enjoy some Phillies baseball, some High Hops, go to Four Fingers Brewing Company and pick up some High Hops.
All right. My final thought, Jack is really, really close to passing me on Twitter. Please make this happen in followers. He cares so much.
Yes.
And I truly don't care. In fact, I care in that I want him to pass me. Like, I desperately want Jack to have more followers than me. So tell everyone you know. Yeah. He's 200 followers back. Just tell everyone you know to follow Jack Fritz on Twitter, at Jack Fritz WIP. And don't unfollow me, because that seems like a rude way to make this happen. But, right, like, just get more people to follow Jack.
But also, whatever, good with that? Whatever you have to do. If you have to unfollow James. I mean, really, there's no... Really, there's no point in following James.
Well, that's true. I can't argue with that, unless you don't know when High Hopes is coming out. You know, everyone has an app. So.
Yep. Go take care of Zoe, all right?
I'm going to. He's Fritz himself, so we'll see you later.